Rethinking Our Future, a national scientific report on climate change released over the Thanksgiving holiday, has underscored what communities across the nation need to do to adapt to global warming. Honolulu Mayor Kirk Caldwell had this to say about resiliency in the face of climate change.
Our climate is changing. People everywhere on this planet need to take care of this planet, to take action now, to avoid a future where we need to worry tremendously about our children and our grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And there is hope. And I think we can turn the corner if we do things, and it needs to happen now. And in questions in the Star Advertiser, you saw people saying, there is hope. We can do things, and let's take the action. First and foremost, we need to wean ourselves off of fossil fuels. All of us, starting with our own city fleet, with our private fleet, with the burning of oil and coal at our electric facilities, our ships, and someday our airlines. We can do this and turn that corner and get off of fossil fuels that contribute so much to the warming of our climate. There are other actions that we've taken, as you know. We, along with many other cities around the country, have committed to stay in the Paris Climate Accord while our federal government has pulled out. There's still hope, because the actual pullout does not happen until after the next general election in 2020. And perhaps sound minds will prevail and say, we want to stay in to make a difference. And as you know, we need to do things here on our island. Right now we have monster surf growing on the North Shore. We've seen the erosion on the 7 Mile Miracle with cliffs of 10 to 15 feet, sandbanks that are eroding into sandbanks where houses are built. We have our king tides in Mapunapuna. We have flooding in parking garages in Waikiki. And during hurricanes, of which we had several this past fall and late summer, we see what happens with tidal surges. And we need to take action. It does not mean that we retreat from the urban core. We stand here in the heart of downtown Honolulu. I'm looking at Bishop Street. I'm looking at the Theo H. Davies building. I'm looking at the A&B building. I'm looking at Dillingham Transportation Building. I don't think we're going to leave from this place, nor are we going to leave from Kaka'ako with these towers and the infrastructure that we put in, or Waikiki, or this pier, or just down the road, the Daniel K. International Airport. We're going to need to harden in certain areas, raise the height and elevations of our harbors and our lands piecemeal. Sometimes a building may go higher, the footprint, or maybe the first floor of a building may be surrendered to tides, and then the streets will get raised. On the other parts of the island, the North Shore, perhaps we retreat, that we give our beaches a chance to live by eroding and allowing the sand to stay. But we may have to give up homes. We may even have to give up roads. It doesn't have to happen tomorrow. But we need to start taking the action to have it happen over the next 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years, and spread the cost of rebuilding infrastructure and covering the damage to homes by putting it over the long term. But I want to make it abundantly clear, we're not retreating from downtown. I don't think the state's going to retreat from the airport or the harbor or us from Kaka'ako or Waikiki. The investment, the infrastructure, the real property values are just too tremendous to do that. But it means we need to do things to protect these areas by raising the height of the land and other things that we're going to be looking to from our scientists.
University of Hawaii geologist Chip Fletcher, who contributed to the national report, put it this way: our Earth is running a fever.
The route forward is crystal clear. We need to cut our global carbon footprint 50% by the end of the decade of the 2020s. So by 2030, basically we have 11 years to cut our global carbon emissions by 50%. In the following decade, between 2030 and 2040, another 50% cut. And in the decade after that, yet another 50% cut, so that by mid-century, we are essentially operating as a carbon-free community on the planet. Each and every one of us has a role to play. We can have smaller families, we can eat a more vegetable-based diet, we can fly less, we can choose renewable energy sources for our transportation and for our electricity needs. And if we all change our lifestyle just a little bit, and then the following year a little bit more, we can all add up to a community, a state, a nation, a world that is achieving this cut. If we don't, we will be leaving our children a world that is warmer by over 3 degrees compared to its natural temperature. And while that may not sound like an enormous amount of warming, just think to yourselves, what is your temperature like? How do you feel when you have a fever of almost 6 degrees Fahrenheit? Because that's what 3 degrees C is. Our world is running a fever. And at 6 degrees Fahrenheit, we go to the hospital. And if it doesn't come down soon, we are facing a severe medical situation. The core temperature of this planet is on a runaway fever, and it's up to each and every one of us to work to stop this problem.
And scientist Victoria Keener was the lead author on the chapter of on Hawaii and the Pacific Islands in this scientific report. She outlined the process of the study and talked about the economic concerns that we may be headed toward an uninsurable world.
In the Hawaii and Pacific Islands chapter of the report, chapter 27, there were 11 authors, myself and Chip included. It was a very inclusive process that took place over the last 2.5 years. Besides the authors, there were over 75 technical contributors that were editing and adding information to this. There have been over 8 reviews at the federal level by 13 federal agencies, by the public, by the National Academies of Science. And so this report, with over 200 authors in total, is a very authoritative synthesis, the most authoritative synthesis, on the impacts of climate change on the sectors and regions of the United States. The emphasis this time around was on the regions. So each region, of which there were 10 in this report, is given a very lengthy look in the chapter with a series of key messages that all the authors and contributors decided on. And really, these were framed to respond to the values of people living in these areas. So what people care about and what noticing what's changing and projecting what's going to change in these values. Wherever possible, we also attached economic values to the impacts of climate change, both in our region, with state data and studies and city studies, as well as values that are not so easy to put a dollar value on. So the value of a beach or recreational values. In all, we want this report to be a resource for decision makers and policy makers and managers. We recognize that, you know, states and cities are empowered right now to be on the front line of climate adaptation in a place that in a way that the federal government is not right now. Something very interesting that just came out last week was at a UN finance meeting. 16 of the world's largest insurers got together, and they said that if we continue on their current greenhouse gas trajectories, resulting in a 3 to 4 degrees Celsius global average temperature rise, we're creating an uninsurable world. And so really what that brings us to is, you know, we've got to act now. So when this accelerates mid-century, we've already have to have our adaptations in place.
But how do you deal with an uninsurable world?
Well, you act quickly, but there are also there are mechanisms, financial mechanisms like catastrophic bonds, like reinsurance. The state of Florida, the city of Miami Beach have both invested heavily in reinsurance and cat bonds. There are a lot of different financial mechanisms that we're looking at. There's no easy answer yet. On a wider scale, all islands are threatened. In our report, the chapter actually focuses on Hawaii and the U.S.-affiliated Pacific Islands. So the question about freshwater, you know, we're lucky on Hawaii that our freshwater isn't directly threatened by sea level rise, but on a lot of the atolls and U.S.-affiliated islands, for example, the Marshall Islands or places in the Federated States of Micronesia, they aren't so lucky. Their freshwater supplies are directly impacted by sea level rise. So there are varying levels of vulnerability and adaptations that are going to be needed throughout the Pacific region.
Now, tomorrow night, the city is hosting a meeting specifically about planning for climate change in the areas of Kapalama and Imele, neighborhoods that stand to change as rail is constructed into our urban core. Now, water experts from the Netherlands will be at that meeting at Hawaii Pacific University's campus at Aloha Tower at 6 tomorrow night. Honolulu's Chief Resiliency Officer Josh Stanbro talked about what's in store.
One of the benefits of Honolulu being in the 100 Resilient Cities Network, which is, you know, with the Rockefeller Foundation, is we've been able to bring in services at no cost to the city to help advise around some of these resilience issues that we're struggling with. In this particular case, the Arcadis, which is a group out of the Netherlands, which has been wrestling with water for, you know, and protecting their infrastructure against high sea level rise for many, many decades, will be here at HPU at 6 p.m. and they're going to be talking about what they've learned after walking around in the Iwile Kapalama area. This is a place where, right along the rail line, the most affordable housing that can be built, you know, for our local residents will eventually go into that transit-oriented development area. But in order to make sure that that infrastructure and those buildings are durable and are going to be safe for the long run, we need to make sure that they're designed well, that they're designed for future flood events as well as today's, that they're designed for future sea level rise levels, not just today's. And that's what this group and the gentleman that is here is going to be talking about here at HPU. What they see on the ground here and what their best advice is around making sure that every dollar we spend now is going to be durable for the long run, for the next century, to make sure that it's a livable, high quality of life here in Honolulu. The idea is, especially that Kapalama Iwile area, even right now, there's flooding issues in some of the low-lying areas there. So as it gets redeveloped, as Mayor was talking about, instead of doing something now without planning and then trying to come back and re-engineer it later, which is hugely expensive, can we design in the design standards now to make sure that the podiums are raised to a different height, that there's some areas that are left to gather the floodwaters when they do come without harming any infrastructure? This is the kind of thing that after Hurricane Sandy, you know, New York and New Jersey brought these folks in from Holland to say, how do we design our parks so that they capture the floodwater rather than having it go into our residences? They've even got a basketball court that's submerged sort of in the ground that serves as a huge reservoir when floodwaters come. So those are the kind of innovative ideas we need to make sure that as we build the new next generation of Honolulu and this urban development that's happening along the carbon-free corridor, which is what we're trying to design rail to be, that all of those homes, all of those businesses are safe and secure in the design there for the next century.
Has anyone talked about relocating fuel lines that might be running under Nimitz, Ala Moana?
There is a ton of infrastructure under the ground, some of it old from World War II and other, you know, times. There will need to be, as part of this resilience effort and this resilience focus that Mayor talked about for next year with State of the City, resilience is broader than just climate change. And I think it's important to realize that all of these different types of infrastructure, they play together. So, you know, people often say, why are you going to dig up the street for water line and then you come back a month later and you dig it up for the electric line, right? Can you guys coordinate? And I think that's what we're going to really try to do with the resilience strategy, is how do we coordinate all of that underground infrastructure that's there? What is most susceptible? The sea level rise is rising up through the ground underneath us. And so some of those pipes will corrode more easily with salt water. And so even before we see the effects, some of the infrastructure is susceptible, and we need to have a really good idea of which ones are most susceptible, which ones would need to be changed out or elevated, and then how that happens in conjunction with the other pieces at the same time, so you're not investing a bunch of money multiple times.
When asked about whether the city should relook at the rail route in light of rising sea levels, Mayor Caldwell had this to say.
If we're talking about relocating rail, then we got to talk about relocating our financial district, our harbor, our airport, Waikiki. And mayors around the world, mayors in our country, they can't relocate their cities. So they're raising podiums and they're raising streets to address that over the long run. And given the type of investment it would require to actually move a city or move our premier resort area would be so prohibitively costly, it will never occur. So the alternative is over time to raise the level of buildings and podiums. And here's the thing, rail already is being designed to address climate change. The podiums and the stations are raised above what they're estimating to be the sea level rise. And because it's elevated in terms of the rail line itself, It's high enough for, even when you raise the roads, for trucks and buses and other things to go on. So it's ironic, they're focusing on the one thing, the one piece of infrastructure that's all built above the ground, way above the ground, or the podiums above the ground. Unlike our sewer system, which is underground, our roads, which we've repaved now, 2,000 lane miles of roads, many in the urban core, at the level they are today. We need to start talking about raising our roads, but not talk about moving rail. I think, for me, bottom line, it's a red herring. Those are the anti-rail guys who want to kill rail by saying, let's relocate it. And you do that, it's dead. It ends at Aloha Stadium or it ends at Middle Street, and you have half the ridership. That's not resilient. That's not sustainable. We're trying to do a carbon neutral corridor along rail. It's a driverless system, hopefully one day used with non-fossil fuels type of generation. It's our best hope for the urban core.
For details about tomorrow's meeting, you can check our webpage at hawaiipublicradio.org.